Hello and welcome to Book Talk from Scottish Book Trust. What if you had the chance to live your life again and again until you finally got it right? This is a question asked fancifully by one of the characters in Kate Atkinson's new novel, Life After Life. Unbeknownst to that character, it's also the attention-grabbing concept that Atkinson has based her book on, retelling the many lives of Ursula Todd, each of which begins from the same English snowstorm in 1910, but take many different routes from there. From, in one instance, dying at birth, choked by the umbilical cord, to ending up in the same room as Hitler in 1930s Berlin. I'm Paul Gallagher, and I'm joined on Book Talk this month by The List's books editor, Kirsty Logan, and Edinburgh City of Literature's Peggy Hughes. They've been reading Life After Life, as have I, and they're going to help me determine whether reading it is like having a recurring literary dream or an inescapable high-concept nightmare. But before we do that, let me remind you that if you've read Life After Life, we'd like to hear your comments. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Scottish BK Trust, or add comments directly to the podcast page at scottishbooktrust.com. We've already had a few responses from you on Twitter, and we'll get to them a bit later. So Kirsty, the first thing that struck me as I opened Life After Life was the contents page, which features repeated chapter headings and the notes of the dates that the chapters take place in. Atkinson has given us a clue, even before she started telling the story, that there's going to be lots of going backwards and forwards in time. My first question to you is, did you pick up on that in the contents page, or did you skip straight past and get into it?
No, I tend to skip everything. I skip the contents, I skip the introduction, I skip maps or family trees, whatever is there. Skip it, because it doesn't mean anything before you read the book, and maybe when I finish the book I'll go back and have a look at that. So I didn't actually notice, and I also don't like dates and times. I don't have a very good memory for numbers and things like that, so I get very confused, and then when you start a new chapter I have to flip back to the previous one.
So there's a lot of that in this book. Certainly the first 100 pages of this book, there is a lot of backwards and forwards, of starting a story and then abruptly ending it and then going back to the beginning of the same story.
It get quite frustrating that when she dies and it goes back to the start, there was a point where I thought, oh, not again. And you know it's not going to be all the details of the life. And it's interesting. I like the way that she has the night of the birth told from all these different angles. I thought that was clever. But I did find it quite frustrating. And I know, of course, the comparison to Groundhog Day is going to come up. And you have the same experience watching that, but it's because it's a comedy. You're like, oh, again. But reading this, it did get quite frustrating.
We asked our followers on Twitter to comment on this book if they read it. And one who likes to be known as Tom's Mum 2010 said, really enjoying Life After Life. Dying was annoying earlier on, but used to it now. To me, I think what she's saying here, and this is what I felt when I was reading it, I soon got into this pattern, this understanding of, okay, this is going to be a series of stories where ultimately it's just about how this girl dies. And it made me think, how am I going to get into it? Like, how am I going to get engaged here if really all I'm reading for is to find out how she dies? So, but tell me.
Yeah, I didn't read it like that at all. You know, there's lots of death. But that comment, I would kind of parse more like there's a lot of death. You know, it's quite dark, but I think she handles that, you know, it's the war years. I think she handles all that really, really well. So I would think there are just a lot of deaths. But I'm interested that that's how you kind of saw it, as the, what's the next death going to be?
I was okay with it at the start. And then when it got to the parts where the main character dies of the same thing, but in a series of different ways. So in the first way, she dies from it this way. And then we restart. And then we think, oh, she won't do that again. But then she dies in a slightly different way, but of the same thing. And this happens, I think, 3 or 4 times, and it did get a little bit frustrating.
Did you skip Kirsty? You did, didn't you? You were like, she's going to die again.
You can't really skip, because just her prose is really beautiful. I didn't feel an urge to skip, but I did consciously think to myself, okay, just enjoy it for the prose for now until the plot settles down a bit.
See, I didn't mind it because I thought each reversion we talked about the different, slightly different angles, slightly different details added in, and the different kind of perspective. So I quite liked it because it was just padding it out each time. To me, the flu bit, I quite enjoyed that.
I liked the book a lot, but it did take me a while to sort of get into it. Like I said, at first I thought, how am I going to get engaged here? But I found once the sections got a little longer, I found myself being drawn in and quite moved. But also what I think Kate Atkinson does very well, even though she is going back to the beginning of Ursula's life quite a lot, she develops her own shorthand of, in terms of the structure, she's not having to revisit all the key points. And as you go along, you find that you can actually fill in what's been missed out in the telling of the story, because it's jumped in at a kind of key decision point And I thought there's real skill in that. I thought that worked, but I could see that perhaps it might be possible to get a bit lost at points. Peggy, how did you feel? Did you feel you were really being skillfully led?
Yeah, no, I think I did feel that way. I also should say I do read contents, and I also noticed the kind of repetitions of the chapter title. So it's snow, snow, snow. So I knew that there's a thing there where, yeah, she's trying to kind of pull you that way, that it's going to repeat a lot. I also find myself thinking, how on earth, what's her process? I suppose I started to think, is it Will self kind of post-it notes all over the place? Got a bit distracted.
It does make you think about the writing of it, doesn't it? I wonder if there's a danger of the fascination in the technical side and just what she's doing as a storyteller almost overpowering the actual substance of the characters and the plot. What's your take on that question?
That was a problem perhaps at the start, mm-hmm. because like we were saying, you get just these very short chunks and it's you're more aware of the technique and you're more aware of the high concept. And then when it all settles down and we get these lovely long passages of her at home and growing up and this kind of complicated relationship with her mother and with all her various siblings, although it's a high concept book, it's really not. It's actually a very quiet book. It's a very personal book. It's about personal relationships, personal development. What is a life? What makes a good life? She keeps replaying and replaying to get it right. But then what exactly does that mean? Are the mistakes that she makes her mistakes? Is she responsible for the various things that happen to her? Because, you know, I find especially it's the kind of book, if you read it in little bits and pieces here and there, you almost forget what the concept is and you think, oh, I'm just reading about this girl growing up.
It's interesting, that question. It's on the back cover of the book, but it's only voiced by a character very late in the book. And Ursula, the character, seems... how much does she actually know? Is she consciously making decisions in these lives to sort of live again? Peggy, what do you
think? Well, yeah, I'm frowning here because that's what we were kind of talking about. It's not like she has a time machine and decides I'm going to go back to the 30s now and do this thing. Yeah. So that's the one thing that kind of flummoxed me a little bit about, yeah, how complicit she was or that kind of thing. I wasn't sure that I completely thought she achieved that.
That's not really Kate Atkinson's goal with this book. It's not like it's a science fiction book where the concept has been mapped out and is there to be logically analysed. The real sort of heart of the book is about character and is about emotion and about relationships. So she's kind of taking something that could be a science fiction story and using it in a completely different way.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the concept doesn't appeal to me at all. If someone had said, oh, do you want to read this book that's about someone reliving their life again and again till they get it right, it wouldn't appeal to me because I would think, oh, like Groundhog Day, or I'm a big X-Files nerd. There's an X-Files episode where that same thing happens. Yeah. This woman's boyfriend robs a bank and she relives the same day again and again, and every single time she tries to stop it from happening and she never can, but she's the only one that knows the days repeating. So it's not a new concept, but it's the way that she does it makes it so interesting. You can almost forget the concept in some ways. I think it's more, she's exploring it perhaps more metaphorically than literally, although it literally is happening in the book.
It's almost as if Atkinson's playing with the idea that we'll tweak this one bit. It's like an experiment or something in a weird way. You know, if we change that, then this outcome. And if we, you know, one of her other books, I Started Early, Took My Dog, the bit at the start of that is, for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. And I think that that's something that she explores quite a lot in her other books. I quite like that weird lack of resolution.
Hitler gets killed in one of these stories.
Does he, though?
Why are you saying does he?
Because I'm just not sure. You know, a lot of her kind of, you know, ending motif is darkness comes, or, you know, that's... So I just don't think you're sure. And, of course, everyone pulls a gun on her, really. So it's like, whose darkness has fallen here? I was completely... It was unclear to me completely who... Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, I guess. And there's also the whole idea that it could actually be dreams. It's clear from the start of the book that this is a story. And I think that's one of the key things that this book is kind of about, because it is about the potential of a story to start somewhere and go somewhere completely different.
I think in this novel, there's this necessary self-absorption that she's replaying the life to make the right decisions. But how is she defining what the right decision is? It's not just her death, because in some of the versions, it's not just her death that's problem, it's somebody else's death. But then why is she picking and choosing? Because in the correct versions, still people die. You know, when one of the ways of dying happens, she constructs it in such a way that she doesn't die and her brother doesn't die, but someone else still does. So why is that acceptable? Of course she can't save everyone, but to how many degrees of intimacy is acceptable for someone to die? And I find, I don't know, it made me dislike. I really liked Ursula, but that made me dislike her because I thought, well, who are you to say, oh, well, it's okay if he dies, but not him.
That's interesting because I never really saw Ursula as wittingly making a decision beyond this kind of bizarre doom instinct that she has. And she sort of, she has this almost deja vu, this sense that something terrible is about to happen. And so she makes a decision. But through the book, I didn't get the feeling that she was any more aware of kind of sort of being outside of time in any way and sort of being able to see that if I do this, then it will affect that person.
I suppose maybe it's because it raised bigger questions of who is making this happen.
I think though, when we talk about the right decision, we're really talking about the happy ending. To a degree, you know, with the war, the Hitler thing connected to all the deaths during the war, that's take him out of the equation and all these people live, you know, we don't have to have all the nasty war. So I just think a lot of it's quite black and white in the fairy tale way.
Yeah, who's happy ending? Not everyone can't have a happy ending.
The book does dwell on death. I mean, like you said, Peggy, in response to that Twitter comment, you were thinking one of the things that it maybe does best is sort of face up to the reality of death, this book.
I did wonder if the book had come from a loss. There's a lot in it about how easy it is to die, just how just a snap decision, you just happen to be in the wrong place. If you have lost someone, you're suddenly very aware of how easy it is, just how flimsy life is and how easy it is. You make this one decision, you're fine, you make this other decision, you're not fine, and you never know at which point you've cheated death.
I love that it's like just ships passing, you know, it could be... Well, I just wanted to say one thing, though, which I think is quite controversial, throwing it down here. I didn't dislike Ursula, but I didn't mind when she died.
I think the problem is when Atkinson tries to go too big, it doesn't really work. I think when she keeps her focus small, it's beautiful, just wonderful. But when it tries to go too big, I'm not sure if it really quite works.
She just contains many selves. She's kind of like Orlando or something. She just has all these different things.
Should we be moved by the stories in the book? Did you find that it connected with you emotionally?
Sometimes. I really liked Sylvie. And I did, from a writing perspective, more technical perspective, the novel does do a funny point of view thing. It has this... not quite an omniscient narrator, but it does it kind of jumps, which I found uncomfortable. We start from Sylvie's perspective, and then as Ursula gets older, we go into her perspective, but then sometimes flip back into Sylvie. It's quite strange. I don't quite know why she's chosen to do that. And even in the same chapter, we can flip in between Sylvie and Ursula, and I found that really strange. I'm not quite sure why that decision was made.
I agree. And there's one chapter in particular where they're sitting in the garden talking, and one section ends with a line of dialogue, and the next section begins with exactly the same one, and it's flipped perspective. And you kind of think, oh, right, this is the way the book is working. But then actually that's not true at all. And I would say that if there's a weakness to this book, it's that Atkinson's been just not tight enough with her own rules of, like, what are the rules of this world? And although that's not the most important thing, I could have done with a little bit more sort of, yes, she knows exactly what she's doing.
For me anyway, that's perhaps why I felt more grounded in Sylvie, because she has the first... voice that speaks, and we keep coming back to her voice, because obviously when Ursula's first born, we can't really have her perspective. I felt less steady with Ursula as a character, whereas Sylvie felt a very real character to me.
But this is the first Kate Atkinson book I've ever read.
So how was it for you? Can you say as a newbie?
Yeah, I was really impressed, like, because I think I had not been drawn to Kate Atkinson books before this. I don't know, I had this preconception that they're maybe like chick lit books. It's got quite a kind of pastel colour.
Lilac is not a good colour, I think. That pastels are generally off-putting, I find.
It looks like a kind of snowy romance, so I probably wouldn't pick up a book with that cover. And it's a shame, because I don't think the content of the book really matches the cover. It's quite gritty, the book, in places. It's quite dark.
Definitely. And we haven't really talked specifically about the Blitz section, but I think the Blitz section is pretty fantastic, isn't it? Like, in terms of the evocation of the atmosphere and what the characters are going through. You're absolutely right. The cover doesn't really represent any of that.
Actually, that's where the weird time shifts are quite useful, because they're closer together. And so one minute she's in this building and then she's not. And then suddenly she is again. So you, the reader, I felt quite discombobulated by that section.
And I feel like when she's got to that point in the story, which is perhaps like 2/3 through the book, there's sort of this cumulative effect that like all the earlier stuff that you've read, even though it's not, strictly speaking, the literal timeline of the story you're in now, it kind of builds up this knowledge that you have of the character. And so, like I said earlier, you kind of fill in those gaps. And Kate Axon is able to just jump straight back into that blitz scenario. And you already know kind of what's come before. And I think that really works. Speaking of the Blitz section, we asked for a few comments on Twitter, and Helen McKinvin said her criticism was that it's maybe a wee bit too long.
It is a long book. I quite like that. If you're in the type of mood where you want to just really get absorbed in a book, and now when I look back at the book, the two really vivid images are the various scenes where they're kind of in the garden of this beautiful house that they live in, and it's all the children and the dog and the maid and the cook, and it's all these kind of beautiful scenes. And then also the Blitz scenes, the really vivid ones in my mind. So if you are in the mood for a book that you want to just really get absorbed in, if you're looking for just a short, satisfying book, this is not that book. This is a book to just really take your time with and get absorbed in.
Peggy, something else that one of our Twitter followers said, Daisy Artichoke: I won't be the only one to say this, but on finishing, I wanted, like Ursula, to start all over again. Astonishingly good. So that brings us to the subject of the end of the book, or you could more accurately say the endings, because this isn't a book that, strictly speaking, has an end. So Daisy Artichoke wanted to start all over again.
Good on you, Daisy. I say good for you, Daisy. I don't know if I'd agree. I don't know if I'd want to read it because, I mean, it did. I was consumed by it, but I don't think I'd want to read it for that reason again. I think if I did read it again, I'd want to look more closely at the little details, if you know what I mean, because there's so much packed into each bit and so many, as we talked about before, different perspectives and angles. That's what I would want to read it again for, not because I'm overwhelmed with wanting to just read it all again.
It's a book, I think, Kirsty, that as you're reading it, you can't help but think, how is this going to end? Because of the concept, because of the fact that it feels like it's going somewhere.
Well, I have a confession. Not only do I not read the chapters and the maps, I also sometimes read the last page before I get to it. I do not play by the rules as a reader. I feel as a reader, it's my right to read a book however I choose. So when I was about halfway through, I thought, how is this going to end? I'll just have a quick look. And so I had a little look at the last couple of pages just to see how it would end. I do that quite a lot. I find, obviously you don't for like a crime novel, because that's why you're reading it, but a book like that, I feel sometimes it can distract me. I want to get really absorbed in it, and I want to appreciate the prose and the characters and everything. And I find it quite interesting also, if you know how it ends, to start to, maybe because I'm a writer and I like to see the structure and the scaffolding of a book, so then you can start to look at the scaffolding and see how is it going to lead to this point. I mean, it was a surprise, because I knew what was going to happen at the end, but I felt the magic of it is seeing all the little tiny strands all weave together to come to that end. Yeah. So I think even if someone read the last page before they read the book, it wouldn't spoil anything for them.
The very last page would spoil nothing, in fact, really.
That's right, because in a way, to read the very last page is the same as reading the first page, basically.
What I would say to that is, because each chapter did have a little end of its own, there were lots of mini resolutions along the way. For me, there wasn't a crescendo, like, I need to know what happens in the end. It felt like there was so much of that throughout.
There's this penultimate chapter, which feels quite removed from, if you like, the story that we've had. There's a reunion, that's as much as I'm going to say. But I actually found that incredibly moving. This very short chapter, which doesn't actually, strictly speaking, fit into any of the stories we've had. But because of all that we've read, we kind of know all the emotions that are leading into that moment. And then to be given it, it's like a little reward. And that, to me, speaks to what works about the book. If I think about it too much in terms of why did all these things happen, it doesn't work on that. But just taking that and seeing the cumulative effect of the whole thing together, it's like, boom, that really hit me. That was powerful. That was worth it.
I think that happens because she is so good at character, I think, that you so feel for them, you know, you're with them. It's so rich and...
Yeah, I think when people think of Kate Atkinson, they always think she's a plot writer. And I think she's a bit rubbish at plots, actually, but she's excellent at character. And I mean, her prose is absolutely beautiful. So if someone said to me, because I think I've read two or three of her crime ones, and if someone said what's the plot, I would not have a clue, but I've got still a really clear sense of the characters. And I remember I felt quite dissatisfied because her whole thing is she has these various plot strands and they all weave together at the end, and I remember each one of her books I was dissatisfied with how the plots wove together at the end. It was really tenuous, like, especially I think it was Started Early, Took My Dog, and at the end I was like looking for more pages, like, but what about all these various plot strands that never got tied together? But now when I look back, I don't really care, because still the characters are so vivid in my mind. And although her books to me don't necessarily have a logical conclusion, they have a certain emotional conclusion, which really works for the reader. You get this sense, you know, you get sad or you get really happy, or it's just this wonderful moment when you finish her books. And if you can just put the logical part of your brain aside, then they are satisfying.
Yeah.
She does the tragedy comedy thing beautifully. You know, one same instance will make you kind of, you know, both flinch and feel really sad and laugh a little bit. But she rolls it all up. I think that's hard to get that balance right.
There's great humour in here. We haven't really touched on that at all, but there's some great funny and it's character-based humour.
Some of the conversations that she has with Pamela, they're both really witty, particularly when they're a bit older and Pamela's had her children and everything. And I really enjoy their banter as well.
I just really like Izzy. Every time she's swanned onto the page, I was like, yeah, more Izzy. She's a comedy creation.
Yeah.
Loose Cannon, I really enjoyed reading her.
Well, we obviously agree that there is a lot to like about Life After Life and would definitely recommend it.
I already have, actually. I've got a few people who are queuing up.
Okay, great. So we're going to leave it there. Those are our thoughts on Life After Life by Kate Atkinson. So please get in touch with us at Facebook and Twitter at Scottish BK Trust, or comment directly on the podcast page at scottishbooktrust.com. There was loads of stuff that we talked about that it would be really interesting to hear your thoughts about. Particularly, we talked about endings and that thing that Kirsty was talking about, skipping to the end of a book. I'd be really interested to hear what listeners think about that and whether you think that's a heretical sin or whether you do that as well.
I'm sure I'm not the only one who commits reading crimes.
I'm sure you're not. So yeah, do get in touch and let us know. And that's all from Book Talk this month. So thank you to my guests, Kirsty Logan and Peggy Hughes. Kirsty, where can people find more from you if they want to?
I have a website, which is kirstylogan.com. And I also tweet at Kirsty Logan. And I'm on Facebook at also Kirsty Logan. So easy to remember there.
And Peggy, if people are interested to hear more from you,
you can find me on Twitter at HughesPeg.
Look out for a new Scottish Book Trust podcast every 2 weeks. The next one will be a new edition of Bookmarked in mid-April, featuring interviews, news and features, including an interview with Kirsty Gunn this time. Find that at scottishbooktrust.com and iTunes. For Scottish Book Trust, I'm Paul Gallagher. Goodbye. Book Talk is produced by Colin Fraser, music by Sam Gallagher.